everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rumbling here on Inside the Ropes. It is episode 305 if you're watching along with us on the WWE Network. It is the night after WrestleMania 15, the fallout from the raging climax, which is not a cum reference, I've been told. Don't believe it though. I'm Kenny, I'm here with Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
I'm okay, Kenny. It's absolutely a cum reference. Like, who is telling you that it's not a cum reference?
Well, you know, the world is supposed to make you believe that it's not a cum reference, but it 100% is.
It 100% is. Like, the raging climax, that's all about it just being a cum reference. And it was not the raging climax, it was the raging anticlimax. Finn and I decided to rename WrestleMania 15 because that was just sort of the, you know, the overall tone of the show was that it was very anticlimactic. None of the matches were very good. And then there were so many shenanigans and so many crazy things that it just kind of took away from enjoying any of the good things that were happening. So yeah, I was not a huge fan of WrestleMania 15, and I guess now we're getting the fallout. I mean, Steve Austin is the champion, which is good. Like, that's what we wanted. So I guess it ended on kind of a high note, but I wouldn't even call it a climax because the whole thing was so just wrought with referees and people running in and whatnot. Like, Mankind counting the three count was lovely, but it just, in the end, we were just tired. We're just like, no.
Well, we will get to it. I just want to have a couple of notes before we begin. I know I promised the Court Bauer interview cast episode on Friday, but Court is doing two shows back to back in New York this week, one including a 40-man battle royal. So he's quite busy and we weren't able to make it happen. But he is going to come on the next few weeks. So that's why that wasn't up. But tomorrow, interview cast is getting a big upgrade. We've got Jim Ross on tomorrow. So that's going to be pretty
cool. Wow.
Jim's going to be on talking about his shows in New York this weekend. He's just left WWE. What's his future? All that good stuff. So we'll be doing that. And then the other thing that I'm really just saying because I feel like maybe it might help in some weird way.
I so want you to ask Jim Ross about Dr. Death Steve Williams and the frat party.
The thing is, I would love to, but I know the answer would never be as good as we want it to be.
Oh, I know.
So I always feel like it's just like in my head, just think about it. But the other thing I just wanted to say, just because it may help some people. So I can't really go into it right now, but it will become apparent at some point soon. So I've had some stuff going on. I've had some quite bad mental health issues the last kind of week or two. And I just couldn't do WrestleMania 15. Like, I just couldn't do it. I was like, guys, I cannot do this today. So that's why I wasn't on it. But I have it downloaded, ready for the plane to go to New York. I'm very excited. I feel better. I'm fine. Don't worry. But yeah, that was why I wasn't on it. And I know Will Ospreay put a thing up today talking about his kind of mental health. And I'm not someone who suffers from it a lot. Like, I'm pretty happy-go-lucky most of the time. I have a beautiful golden retriever boy who makes me smile every day. And Hulk. But no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I think it's important to talk about it a little bit. So Will Ospreay said, you know, he'd been going through some stuff and wrestling is what got him through. So yeah, sometimes shit happens, but that is why I was not on WrestleMania 15 last week. But I'm looking forward to listening to it. I heard that you guys were not huge fans of WrestleMania 15, Sondra.
Shockingly, we were not. Shockingly, we were not big fans of WrestleMania 15. I hope we did it justice. You know, and it's every once in a while, it's kind of nice for you to actually get to listen to a podcast that you're not on, right? So
yeah, I love it. Because I only got to listen to the first half of the Power Slam podcast you and Finn did because I had so much on that, like, it got to a point where, like, it was 3 weeks later. And the stuff was maybe a little bit outdated, so I just didn't get back to it. So I still have it on my phone, so I might get to it on the plane, but WrestleMania 15 is one of those ones that it's just... So what's also funny is I went and looked at the Observer, as I always do. The readers gave this a thumbs up.
What?
There was 55.1% thumbs up, 25.1% thumbs down, 19.8% in the middle. Now, do you agree with this aspect that I feel like WrestleMania 15 is booked like a Raw?
Oh, it's 100% booked like a Raw. Like that, I think I said that on the WrestleMania 15 review, that it felt like a fine episode of Raw. And it did not feel like a WrestleMania at all. Like, there were distraction finishes and all sorts of stuff going on, and it none of it felt big enough either. I mean, D'Lo Brown and Test challenging for the tag team championships at WrestleMania. Because they won a battle royal, or didn't win, but they were the last two not eliminated in a battle royal. And like, what? How is that set up to a WrestleMania match? And I know WrestleMania wasn't the spectacle back then that it is now, but it still was supposed to feel like the biggest show, right? Like, people are decked out in, like, tuxes, and it's supposed to be this big, big thing. And if you're calling it the Raging Climax, it should really be the pinnacle of your kind of season of entertainment.
Should be like a great orgasm.
It should be like a great orgasm, and it certainly was not. It was the most disappointing sex ever,
right? Do you know that Sable and Tori got -2 stars?
It is atrocious, that match. It is so atrocious. Like, they say that Tori is an accomplished professional wrestler, and she has done things previous to coming to the World Wrestling Federation. I have not seen evidence of this yet, but it felt like a fine episode of Raw. It's not like it was terrible as a show, I guess. But if you're expecting WrestleMania and you're expecting something good, even by the 90s WrestleMania standards, where it wasn't the huge spectacle that it is today, it felt very underwhelming. And of course, Finn has a pretty sour taste in his mouth about it, because he flew to America for WrestleMania 15 and had to endure this atrocity. So
yeah, this was
the
one WrestleMania
he
ever went to. The one that he went to was WrestleMania 15.
After the rage party the night before, which he refuses to talk about. He still has so much PTSD about it. He won't even talk about it.
Oh, he cracks me up. yeah, WrestleMania 15 is absolutely bonkers. But yeah, the Sable Tori match got like -2 stars, and it was the D'Lo Test thing still to this day. I just am like, why? Like, why? So
I don't understand it. Like, I don't understand it at all. And it would make sense if maybe they were starting a story between D'Lo Brown and Test, or something was going to happen with that, right? Like, they had to be an unlikely partnership, and if they won the titles and did a story that way, or if, like, their dissension caused them to not win the titles against Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart, and then that led to D'Lo Brown versus Test as a really interesting story. But judging from this episode of Raw, none of that is coming to pass.
We should note before we talk about this episode, the Big Boss Man did take a week off because he'd been hung. So, you know, you should... Oh,
I'm glad they allowed him to take a week off, because he was actually hanged in the middle of a ring.
Okay, so let's get into this. It's,
I mean, what even?
They're in the Continental Airlines Arena, formerly the Meadowlands, its best name, not the Izod Center, its fucking worst name. So we get the whole kind of recap of September to now, of Vince trying to screw Austin and saying he would never be the champion, and Austin finally getting the belt at WrestleMania 15. So Austin comes out, huge reaction. He won the title. He talks about, you know, he looked at that belt and thought it's just not worth the trouble and aggravation, this being the belt that he won from The Rock, that The Rock had carried around for months. He brings Vince out and he surrenders the WWF Championship to Vince McMahon. And then he shows footage of Vince running away with a smoking skull belt, saying he was going to have it like framed in his house. He tells Vince that he's got 2 hours to bring the smoking skull belt. Vince says, you know, you can't do anything to me because, you know, I would need to physically provoke you. Then we get the clips of McMahon trying to beat up Austin at the end of WrestleMania. And Austin says that means he's got 24 hours, which means that Vince has 2 more hours to get the belt, or Austin's going to stomp a mud hole in his ass and walk it dry. Austin then starts celebrating while Vince nails Austin with the title belt and does one of my favorite wrestling runs of all time.
It is Vince, a brilliant runaway.
Where Vince tries to run away. Big start to the show. You know, you got the two big names out there. What did you make of the open and the idea that Austin wants his belt back and that Vince is so annoyed that he just whacks Austin with the title?
I mean, I thought it was a pretty good opening segment. I would go on to be a little bit baffled that they told this story concurrently with another story on the same episode of Raw, because that does not make any sense to me. But I think in terms of Austin McMahon, this was very effective. Austin coming out there and kind of celebrating and getting the mushy stuff out of the way, right? Like saying how happy he was to be champion and how hard he's worked for it. And then relinquishing the belt was interesting, because for a second I was like, what? Is this when he's going to like... And then it clicked about 5 seconds later. I was like, oh, he wants the smoking skull belt, of course. Like, he wants a different one. And I couldn't remember if he had had the smoking skull belt before, because I don't know. I don't have that great a memory for Retro Raw sometimes. But when they showed the footage of Vince McMahon having the belt and like running away with it and being all maniacal and being the worst person ever, then yeah, like this is fine. You know, Austin McMahon is not the story that I'm most invested in terms of Vince McMahon and his relationships to people on the roster, but it is the biggest story that they have going in terms of box office and in terms of fan investment overall. And this made sense. It's Austin fucking with McMahon because he can. And the very specific contractual stipulations come into play again here, right? Where Austin's like, ahaha, I was physically provoked by you, so I can kick your ass. And that is going to happen if you don't bring me this belt in 2 hours. So it was all pretty effective in terms of storytelling and internal consistency and logic, which I appreciated. And you know, it feels like kind of the ultimate fuck you to Vince McMahon, that not only am I your champion, not only am I, you know, champion of the World Wrestling Federation, which is the thing that you hate to happen, like that's the thing Vince McMahon wanted the least, but I also want my belt back. And so I'm taking your personal prize and I'm getting it back. And I have absolute reason and retribution to do so. Like, I guess Vince McMahon could have, instead of giving the belt to Austin, just gone and hidden until the 24 hours expired. But that wouldn't have made for nearly as good a story.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think sometimes stuff that we might complain about today on Raw and SmackDown is that, like, even though, like, if you think about it, some of that, you know, it's so bonkers, the idea, like, you've got 24 hours after you attack him in the contract, but at least it's explained. At least they're, you know, I'm all for bonkers wrestling as long as you're explaining it, as long as you're telling me
why. You need
to
live within your own world and be consistent in it.
Yeah, and I thought the opening segment was really hot. I liked it. I liked Vince just whacking him with the belt and running away. I thought it was great.
Well, I kind of like that he's like, well, if I've already physically provoked him, then I might as well just do this. You know, and Austin's reaction to it too. Like, he gets knocked down, and then Vince, obviously, he just books it out of there. Austin doesn't go after him because he's like, I don't have to. Like, I have my opportunity. I've given him two hours. He just kind of laughs about it. Yeah. He's like, no, I've got him.
Then we get, so, like, look, I'm not someone, I have never entered into a vagina in my life. Never. But watching some of these women walk down the hall, I'm like, I get why some people do. I really do. Sable looked so good. She looked great.
Sable looked incredible.
We see Sable, we see Tori, we see Jacqueline and Terry, we see Ivory, we see everybody coming, and then the ministry arrive. Midian looks like such a bag of shite. It's not even funny. But they all arrive. Shocking, you know, finding there that Midian doesn't look good. Can I tell you something quick?
He's normally such a strapping gentleman.
Something that's quite shocking, Sandra. I think I might be ready for the grind. Cause Sable,
are you ready
looked,
for the grind?
Sable looked incredible here.
Is this why you had the Sable poster on your wall?
Maybe. Maybe this was... No, yeah. I mean, maybe. Sable was great. I mean, she just... It was funny because I was talking to Big Steve Gunn earlier on, you know, the Geordie Sable, and he was... we were talking about... Because I was watching the show and I was just like, my God, Sable's so over. And he was like, yeah, I don't really understand why they tried to make her a heel when everybody cheers her, and then when they made her a heel, they also gave her like a catchphrase that everybody's going to agree with. Like,
yeah, that's the baffling part, is that she's being a heel by just flaunting her sexuality and, like, you know, trying to dance, right? I actually just recorded about the Rage Party with Ollie, and he was actually shocked at the presentation of women at the Rage Party. He was like, I mean, are they just always presented as sexual objects? And I was like, yes, welcome to 1999. He's like, I didn't notice this when I was a kid. And he's obviously, like, watching it week to week. I guess we're so used to it. But Sable at the Rage Party tries to do a dance. And it is atrocious because Sable cannot dance, because Sable just is not talented at much other than looking good. And same thing here. I mean, like, when she does the grind and everything, obviously, but people want to see Sable because the whole point of Sable on this show is to look good and sexy and have big boobs and, you know, shake her ass in front of people. And that's what she's doing. So, of course, they're going to cheer her for it. Like, I can't stand Sable. I think she's an atrocity. And it's really interesting because when Sable was brought into the World Wrestling Federation, I quite liked her. Like, remember how much I liked Sable as a character when she was kind of feuding with Mark Miro and kind of taking her own autonomy and becoming a really kind of interesting and complex character in a way? All of that has been gone for me for a long time. And now I just think she's terrible.
Whereas it's funny because, like, you know, we look at today and stuff and, like, I would rather watch Sable than Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose, Lana, Naomi, like so many of them. And I think it's because the thing that they did really well with Sable was they kind of kept to her strengths for the most part. She never really wrestled super long matches, even though she was terrible. But whenever she comes out, there's such an atmosphere when she comes out. And I think what's probably happened over the years has been an issue is that, like, Sable was kind of the original... Well, Sunny was the original pin-up girl, but Sable was the original kind of pin-up girl who could back it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, she could powerbomb a man, she could do whatever. And I think that they then just found more and more and more women like that, and that became, like, the normalised concept. And, like, you know, if you look at somebody like Mandy Rose, who I guess is playing some kind of Sable character in some ways,
mm-hmm.
but then she's not really allowed to explore that as a character. She's more just like, well, we still want you to go in there and wrestle like everybody else and wrestle the same and just become part of the furniture. Whereas with Sable, she was allowed to stand out. And I think that's why, like, even though you're right, she is a terrible performer. Like, she is really bad at her job. But I can't deny that I really enjoy watching her. I really enjoy the atmosphere surrounding her. And she just feels like a star. And I think that's, for, like I've said before, I really like stars in wrestling. And she was one. And I think that's why she maybe works for me more than maybe she does for you. Because I know you're not a huge star person.
Yeah, I'm not as into stars as I am. Like, I gravitate towards certain performers, and they tend not to be the performers that are huge stars and bring in box office. So it just, like, nothing about her works for me anymore. Like, really at all. And it's interesting what you say about Mandy Rose. I mean, from what I understand, and I don't watch Impact, so I don't have a great understanding of it, but from just what I've seen people discussing online, it sounds almost like Scarlett Bordeaux is doing kind of what you're describing as, like, a Sable type character, but she's doing it really well, because it sounds like she is, you know, obviously she's bringing, like, sexiness back to wrestling and kind of embodying everything that, like, divas would or whatever, right? Like, kind of like Eva Marie as a character was doing before she left. And it sounds like in TNA or in Impact right now that Scarlett Bordeaux is actually doing it to great effect, which is interesting that it's happening in another wrestling promotion. I kind of wish WWE would let Mandy Rose explore that more, but then they get so much backlash, right? Because they had the whole, like, Mandy Rose Naomi thing, and people were railing on that and being like, you can't present women in these sexual situations, and you can't just have her be, like, a complete jerk because she's just flaunting her sexuality. But I think that's an interesting character to explore. Like, I miss Eva Marie. I thought she was kind of great on SmackDown.
One of the things that Sable used to do was Sable, like, and look, it's, I'm always very aware of, like, a man saying how women should act as a problematic way to go about things.
Mm-hmm.
But, in spite of that,
allow you to tell women how to act.
No, but, like, I, you know, my thing all along has been that I think there are women who want to be sexualized, and that's how, and I think that those women should be represented as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's the problem. I feel like there's, look, I am totally with the people who are like, I think women should be strong and equal and all that kind of stuff. I'm with you. But I don't think that means they can't, like, I think that if you go back and watch some of the Sable stuff in 98, she actually was a really strong female character. She was, like,
she was.
And what's funny about that is that she was, but if they tried to do that stuff now, I feel like there is a sort of sphere of all types of wrestling fans that are, you know, the kind of extremists of everything, mm-hmm. that are so loud in their sort of dislike of, because to me it's like, if you're not a fan of a certain character, a certain type of character, just, that's fine. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't exist.
Right.
So, like, if I don't like, if I'm not a huge fan of, like,
Priscilla Kelly,
right? Well, no, that, I would say it's a different example, but I know what you're trying to say. I will not, anyway, I'm not getting into that conversation, but, like, 205 Live, for example, right? I am not a huge fan of, you know, kind of cruiserweight wrestling without a lot of character stuff and a lot of attention to it. That's not really mm-hmm. for me. Doesn't mean it shouldn't exist. It absolutely should exist. If people like it, great, it's just not for me. Where, and I think that's the kind of thing, if you're not into, like, a really sexualized character, you don't have to be. But I think the problem would only really come in where, like, if the person was being portrayed as, like, it's against her will, or, like, you know, because remember you used to have these things in wrestling and in movies and stuff where, like, you'd have, like, the secretary who very clearly was, like, a model and she's pretending to be a
Yes.
secretary, and then like against her will, she's like having her jacket ripped off and whatever. And like it's quite uncomfortable now to watch that kind of stuff. And I don't think that's what that's obviously not what Sable was doing. And that's not what I think Mandy Rose would be doing. So yeah, maybe they can figure out a character who could be like a modern day Sable or like an Eva Marie character who doesn't have a problem using their sexuality to get what they want.
Well, I
And
think the problem with the presentation on Retro Raw isn't that women are being sexual and portraying their sexuality. I mean, we have a character like Deborah too, right? Like, she is all about flaunting her sexuality. That is what she does, and it's on her terms, and it's fine. But I think the problem on Retro Raw is that that's all we're presented with, and there isn't a diversity at all, because like currently we had Mandy Rose being someone who was flaunting her sexuality and trying to, you know, be a dick and pretend to sleep with Naomi's husband and whatnot. But you also have Becky Lynch in the main event. You also have Sasha Banks and Bayley being really good friends and supporting each other and being there for each other finally after all of the, you know, shenanigans of them breaking up and not breaking up and whatnot. Like right now, they are very supportive friends. You have Kairi Sane and Io Shirai also being very supportive friends to one another and being really good wrestlers. So, you know, you have Naomi kind of sticking up for herself and, you know, sticking up for her marriage. You have Jimmy Uso not falling for Mandy. Have you seen my wife? Like, I am in love with her. What even are you doing, stupid white girl? So I think the fact that we have so many different characters now that are female, and I mean, I am not saying that WWE is the pinnacle of women's wrestling right now. Listen to our stuff about current 2019 wrestling. I have a whole lot of qualms with it. But they're at least presenting a diversity of characters and a lot more women who are autonomous and doing kind of everything on their own terms, and it's not all about men. Whereas I feel like in Retro Raw, Sable's kind of doing things on her own terms, and it's not necessarily about men. Like, she does want people to ogle her, and she wants them to look at her, and she has an ego that's, you know, bigger than it really needs to be, and that's supposed to be the interesting part of her character. What I don't like about Sable is that she's a terrible performer, and so watching her try to act and watching her try to emote and watching her try to wrestle is painful for me because she cannot do any of it. Whereas I feel like when Eva Marie was doing kind of a similar character, she wasn't a very good wrestler, and that's true, but they played more to Eva Marie's strengths by not having her wrestle very much, right? Like, they had her avoid matches when she debuted on SmackDown, and in early Sable career, they didn't really have her wrestling a whole lot. And when she was in the ring, they kind of hid her weaknesses a lot more. I feel like she's being overexposed a little bit now, where, you know, she's wanting to have more lines and act and be more a part of the show, and she's just terrible at it. And then you have this match that happens with, was it Sable and Jacqueline versus Ivory and Tori? And there's a little bit of wrestling that happens, like a little bit, because, you know, Jacqueline and Ivory can both wrestle. Tori is not very good. Like, I'm sorry, she's just not. But you get an actual, like, a little bit of a match here. And it was actually jarring to see a little bit of nearly competent women's wrestling for, like, 1 minute on an episode of Retro Raw. So you're not getting a whole lot of women that can, you know, go in the ring and prove themselves. And I guess the whole point of this long-winded rant is that all we're getting is sexualized and jealousy and, you know, women be crazy bitches and nothing else.
See, we do get about a minute of competent wrestling, and then Ivory chases Terry up the ramp because she's trying to light another cigar. Sable then hits Jackie, who is her partner, in the back of the head with a belt. Tori then does one of the worst backslides I've ever seen for a pinfall. And then Tori and Sable are about to brawl when the Ministry of Darkness interrupts. This is straight out of Sondra's wheel book of, like, I love when the worlds collide within the same universe.
I do love when worlds collide. Can we just... Why did Sable hit Jacqueline?
I think the idea was she's just so, like, sort of so up herself that she just doesn't care about anybody. So she's like, she doesn't even want to... And obviously she's got issues with Jacqueline long term, so...
I guess for me that just doesn't work because, like, I'm not invested in Sable as a character, and it still seems like the entire division is still built around Sable, and that's a problem for me. It's like when Carmella was women's champion and we didn't buy her as champion and the division suffered as a result. Like, Sable being the champion and it all being about her, the performer that I do not like and do not want to see, I'm just like, well, why is she turning on her partner? It's not like I want a Sable Jacqueline feud now. Like, I'm guessing that's where it's going, but it's just motivation wise it didn't make a lot of sense to me.
So the
because they're both heels.
Yes. No, I'm with you. It's one of those things. Paul Bearer in the Shades makes me laugh a lot. Undertaker wants to see what Sable's got. She starts grinding for him. He grabs her by the throat. He says, Vince, I've got your meal ticket, so you better come out here right now to save her. Vince tells Shane to stay in the back with Stephanie. Stephanie, who earlier had been told to phone home and get the smoking skull belt.
Why is Stephanie even there?
Because she's getting into the family business. But remember, the whole story is, I guess the idea is if Vince has her with him, then he can protect her more than, you know, her being at home.
Oh, is that supposed to be it?
Because then if they go to the house, what can he do if he's not there? So Vince comes out,
okay,
drops the mic, comes out. But then as he comes out, Vince realizes that Undertaker just wanted him out of the room so he could kidnap Stephanie. So Vince then runs back into the room. The security guard's laid out. Shane's apparently gone to the toilet or something, even though Shane was told to look after her. And he starts yelling at Shane. They come back from break. Shane wants to call the cops. Vince is like, you can't call them. Vince is like delusionally trying to say, you know, they'll find her. She'll be in the parking lot. They can't have gone far and you know, we'll find her. I'm curious because, like you said, they're telling two different stories here. They're telling the Austin Vince story on one hand, and then they're telling this Undertaker McMahon family thing. Talk to me about the Vince and Shane kind of being concerned family members for their family member who we are led to believe has been kidnapped by the Undertaker. How did it play out for you?
Okay, first of all, I don't believe that Shane is concerned for his family member. I believe he is complicit in this. And the reason for that is that he was told to look after Stephanie, right? Like, he was told to look after her. Where the fuck did he go? Like, he was gone for, what, how long does it take to kidnap someone? I don't know. But if you're told, stay here with her while I go out and deal with the Sable situation, because the Undertaker has, you know, Sable by the neck and he's going to choke her and snap her like a twig, like he hanged the Boss Man. He's like, you saw what I did to Boss Man yesterday. So there are all these references to the fact that they literally hanged someone in the middle of the ring and the Undertaker is not being prosecuted for murder for reasons. Yes, the whole thing is really strange. I just want to mention too, like, Sable being Vince McMahon's meal ticket. Is this a weird, like, reference to when Vince McMahon brought Sable back and there was the implication that they were fucking? Like,
well, I think it's more the idea.
Is that what I'm supposed to get from this?
I think the idea is more like, you know, Sable's one of your big stars that you put out here to make money for yourself, and I could snap her like a twig at any second. I think the idea is just like, how could Taker get Vince out there? You know, if he's threatened to kind of break Sable's neck, then Vince has to go and take care of it, but really getting Vince out of the room makes it easier for them to get Stephanie.
Yeah. Okay, so that, I guess that makes sense. And I guess, you know, for that line of thinking, you have to see Sable as one of the biggest stars on the show. And, like, I guess she is. She just doesn't come across that way to me. So I guess it just plays differently in my head. But yeah, I mean, Vince McMahon trying to, like, play concerned father. There's so many weird things about this segment. Like, Stephanie's sitting there and they're acting like she's 12 years old, right? Like, they're acting like she's a child, and she's not. She's a grown woman at this point. But they're acting like, you know, oh, his baby daughter, and, like, Shane's talking about his baby sister and all of this stuff. And they're acting like she's, like, I don't know, they're really infantilizing Stephanie in a way that I don't find very comfortable. And then, you know, for Vince McMahon to leave and to leave Shane in charge of Stephanie, like, Vince McMahon was not out there that long. Shane must have immediately left the room. If he didn't see who kidnapped Stephanie, he must have left the room and then come back, like, only when Vince came back, right? So I believe that Shane McMahon is complicit in all of this and let the acolytes in to kidnap Stephanie, because otherwise the timing just doesn't make sense to me. Vince McMahon playing concerned father and all of that just doesn't sit right with me when he's supposed to be the evil owner of the corporation. Like, it's the same problem I've been having with the corporation versus the ministry all along, is that they're both heel groups. So even though, like, Stephanie herself right now doesn't seem to be a horrible, horrible person yet, she, you know, like, she's just a victim in all of this. And that's another problem with the presentation of women on the show. She really is just a prop to be kidnapped or to be passed around or to be traumatized for the furthering of the story of the men. So, yeah, there's a lot going on, but, I mean, the dynamic between heel and babyface just is completely confusing, and it's all just very jumbled, because Sable's a heel, and the Undertaker is attacking Sable, who's a heel, so he's a heel for attacking her. And then Vince McMahon is like also an evil corporation owner, but we're supposed to cheer him against the Undertaker because the Undertaker hanged a man and might kill a lady. But we're supposed to hate Vince McMahon the most. And
the compliment I would give Vince here is that, you know, because it's the idea you're trying to tell these two different stories. Like, part of you could say what's very nuanced because Vince is still professionally feeling how he feels, but Undertaker's doing this personal stuff to him. And I think that the credit I would give to Vince is that he's such a good performer that he kind of makes it work in some ways, which is a testament to him because it's far too jarring to really properly work. Because I actually think the story...
I mean, as a performer, he's very good. Like, I think his delivery of the lines and his delivery on the show in everything that he does is great. It's just the problem is that I'm watching one episode of a television show and not two.
Yeah, and I think that the story with him and Shane and Stephanie and Undertaker is the more compelling story. Whereas it feels like with the Austin thing, we're just kind of getting like, you know, Bon Jovi are coming out and singing Living on a Prayer again.
The Undertaker thing completely overshadows the Austin thing. Like, I forgot about Austin and the belt until I think they show him backstage at some point, like later on in the show. And I was like, oh, right, that's still going on. We're still waiting for the belt to arrive from Connecticut or wherever. So it... Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just, it's pretty jarring. But, I mean, good on Vince realizing, wait, the Acolytes aren't out there. And good on Michael Cole telling us, oh, he realized the Acolytes aren't out there. That's why he ran back. Because at first I was like, why did he suddenly just leave? But he realized that the ministry wasn't complete. He realized that this was all a ploy. This was a decoy. I am kind of left to wonder what happened to Sable. Because we don't really go back to that. Like, does the Undertaker just let her go? Does he kidnap Sable? Does she die? Like, what happens there?
Yeah.
Because you'd think the Undertaker's such a dick at this point, right? Like, he literally killed a man yesterday. Like, why would he just let Sable go? I know that she's not his goal, but wouldn't he just want to unleash destruction on the World Wrestling Federation?
Well, it's funny. Like, I loved him coming out and just, like, using Sable. Like, I loved him, like, I want to see what you've got. And then Sable's grinding for the Undertaker. I live for segments like this.
I mean, there is something glorious about watching Sable grind for the Undertaker. It's baffling.
X-Pac comes out. He comes out, says a year ago he came back, got a phone call from DX, Triple H saying DX has fallen apart. Triple H turned on him. The Outlaws and X-Pac are going to keep coming out here. They're going to keep telling people to suck it. They're going to keep doing what they do. And Hunter's ass is grass and he's going to smoke it. I want to try and give X-Pac a compliment here before we absolutely tear him to shreds. I think that his intensity is admirable.
His intensity is admirable. I agree with you. He is very shouty. You can tell he believes what he's saying.
I just don't think he's like... I think at this point he really was still trying to be a promo. He hadn't done it a lot. And the problem was like with when Hunter and China turned on him, like that's like a... It's a big turn, right? Because Hunter's been with him for the last year. China's already turned, and they're arguably the more pushed performers than X-Pac. So he's kind of like got a lot going against him. But I think that what was good here was the fans were still behind him. So, you know, it wasn't like the fans were just going, oh, well, who cares about this guy? They were into him. And I think the dynamic of a babyface X-Pac and a heel Triple H is something new that we've not seen yet. So hopefully that can... hopefully X-Pac can bring out a match with Hunter that you... are not bored by?
Yeah, I mean, X-Pac is very good at wrestling, you know, and X-Pac is very good at being believable as an underdog babyface in the ring, and that is my favorite thing that X-Pac does. My favorite thing that X-Pac does is definitely not speaking. I mean, I didn't think this promo was as atrocious as many X-Pac promos. I think that he had something real to say because there is an emotional intensity behind his words, right? And you're right. Triple H and China turning on X-Pac, Triple H specifically because China had already turned on him. But like he just thought that, you know, they got China back in the fold and she was back in the family and everything was going to be great. And I was very annoyed that China seemed to be back with Triple H because I was like, why? I don't like this. But it turns out China was really luring Triple H to the corporation now. And I mean, poor X-Pac, everyone keeps turning on him, right? Like over and over and over, he's been screwed and he's been turned on. So as a character, X-Pac is actually fairly sympathetic. And I think he would remain a lot more sympathetic if he stopped yelling so much and saying stupid things like your ass is grass and I'm going to smoke it.
Then we have Vince getting a phone call. So this is what I love about like living in the world of wrestling, right? So Vince gets the phone call we get to hear the Undertaker saying, "She really is sugar and spice and everything nice." And at the exact same time, Shane McMahon, who's in the room, goes, "What's he saying?"
Wrestling's the best. Wrestling's the best,
It's one of
isn't
those
it?
ones where,
I mean,
like, I just kind of go, "This is why I love wrestling." Like, people will go, why do you love this thing?" You go, "'Cause nothing is as bonkers as this world. No matter what part of it, I'm
no.
not saying WWE, I'm just wrestling. No matter what part of it is that you like, it's just not comparable to anything else."
No, it's an absolutely unique art form, and I love it. I love it absolutely. The Undertaker is super creepy here, like super creepy here, right? And I'm trying to remember if I watched the first episode of SmackDown before or what, but like I've heard Stephanie talk about what the Undertaker does to her at certain points. And so the Undertaker saying she really is sugar and spice and everything nice. Again, it's a very infantilizing term because it comes from, you know, like nursery rhyme type thing. So they're really indicating that Stephanie is younger than she is. And also, like, I don't know. It just sort of implies that the Undertaker is doing things to Stephanie that I don't want the Undertaker doing to Stephanie because I'm just not a big fan of rape in wrestling or in life ever. So I don't
I'm
know.
just
The whole
not.
thing
I'm
is
just
very
not a. I'm just
off-putting.
not a general fan of rape, at all.
No, I think we are categorically against it a lot. So yeah, I mean, there are very creepy overtones to this, and I do not like them. And it's weird. And I don't know, like Stephanie as the traumatized victim, I guess. Like, doesn't she just feel like a prop? She feels like as much of a prize to me as that smoking skull belt at this point.
I think she is. I mean, it's hard for me because I know where the story goes and stuff. But what I will say is I think that this story is actually really, really well done overall as we get to it. Like, there's elements to it. I just don't want to give anything away. But there's elements
Okay.
in the next kind of month or so where I think that you can be like, I didn't see this little bit of storytelling coming.
Okay.
And that there's layers and things that add to it. Anyway, Big Show is fresh off being shite at WrestleMania to face Test.
Here to be shite on Raw.
Yeah, he'd be shit on Raw. He talks about how Vince is having some personal issues that he doesn't care. Vince thought that he owned the Big Show, but nobody owns him. Because yeah, he beats Test in like 30 seconds. Starting tonight, Vince is going to start to eat his words. So he beats Test in 30 seconds and cuts a promo. And I just want to thank the Big Show for only having a 30-second match so that it didn't get offensive.
It didn't get offensive, but it still managed to be awful. Like, even the choke slam, I know that it was supposed to demonstrate that the Big Show was so big and strong that he could choke slam Test and like keep holding him up, but it looked like he was really struggling to hold Test up. And then like choke slam didn't really work for me. I mean, that's all the match was, essentially, was the choke slam, right? But even that looked kind of terrible. And the Big Show looked like he really couldn't be bothered being there. And also, like, and Test is crap, right? Like, sorry, Kyle, but Test is crap. And they're still supposed to have him be a big, formidable figure, right? Like, he's supposed to still be a guy in the corporation that you'd be like, oh, well, if Test is coming out to face you, then, you know, he's super big and I should be afraid of him. Who's going to be afraid of Test after this?
Yeah, this was not a good night for Test at all.
It was not a good night for Test. I mean, he was
Test does get
challenging
better.
for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships the night before. So I don't know. The whole thing was just, it wasn't much. And Big Show, the thing with Big Show is that he is capable of cutting a promo. Like, he really is as a performer, but he just looks like he can't be bothered by anything. And why is he so incredibly out of breath after a 30-second match with Test where he literally did one move?
It's a conundrum. We've got a lot more to get through, so let's move on a little bit. Vince did the first sensible thing he's done in a while, but he was like sent Shamrock to go and find Stephanie because,
I do
like,
have a question. Is Big Show supposed to be a baby face now?
yes,
Okay.
because sending Shamrock to find Stephanie is good on many levels. He's very effective, and also he is used to traumatizing women, so
That is true.
he's able to find them. He's got like a sixth sense. Sandra,
I mean, he's mental enough to just tear through an arena. I love
he
Ken
is.
Shamrock.
Are you standing on the edge of tomorrow?
Today, 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 today.
It's Dr.
Yes.
Death, Coach Dr. Death against Hardcore Holly. this is just so crap. In the end, Williams hits a power slam to drive Holly to a table, but then he ends up taking the referee out of the process. Then Al Snow comes out and lays out Dr. Death with a frying pan.
I mean, it can't get any more slapstick than that, right? I guess Dr. Death challenging for the Hardcore Championship makes sense. They did brawl at the frat party last week, so there is a personal issue between these two gentlemen. This match is not good. Like, I mean, they wanted Dr. Death Steve Williams to be the next big thing, really? Like, he has flashes of brilliance, and bless him, he is actually putting in some effort to be a character and to look intense and to be, you know, really angry at Hardcore Holly and whatnot. But it's just, it's not great. It's not a great effort. JR comes out with him, and JR is sitting on Spanish commentary the entire time. And, you know, meanwhile, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler are like, do you think he knows that he's speaking to a Spanish audience? And Jim Ross is like, I just want my job back. You know, like, honestly, that's all I want. Like, I just want to go back to work. What's wrong with that? And Marcelo Rodriguez and was it Hugo Savinovich at that point? Right.
Yeah, thanks for you.
And was it Carlos Cabrera or Marcelo Rodriguez? I can't remember which one of them was there.
I guess Carlos Cabrera.
Carlos Cabrera and Hugo Savinovich are just kind of like, trying to do their jobs. Like, they're trying to call the match as it's going, and Jim Ross is, you know, just kind of talking over them, and he's on Spanish commentary now, apparently, like, trying to campaign for his job back. So the whole thing is really strange, because I kind of thought that Jim Ross wasn't in this sort of, like, heel story anymore. Like, he doesn't seem like he's being presented as a heel, but he's still campaigning for his job back against, like, I understand why you say now that Michael Cole never recovered from this story, because Jim Ross is incredibly sympathetic here. All he wants to do is do his job, and he is capable of doing his job.
And he got to come out against all the odds. He got to come out in the main event of WrestleMania with not being aesthetically the way that you know the company wanted him to be, and you know that you know WrestleMania 15 is not the best event in the world, but it felt bigger with JR commentating that main event. It did. You know,
it did. And JR says on Spanish commentary here, he was like, I was only in commentary last night because Stone Cold Steve Austin demanded it, you know, which I think he said because Stone Cold and The Rock demanded it, which is a weird kind of like shoot element to bring into it, because that's true. Like, they wanted JR to call their match. So I don't know, the whole character stuff is just really strange. And then Dr. Death Steve Williams kind of almost getting win over Hardcore Holly, but then getting hit with an actual frying pan, like, and I assume sent into obscurity. Like, he can't last much longer than this.
I think this is his last Raw appearance.
What a way to go out, being hit on the head with a frying pan by Al Snow. There is some consistency to what Al Snow is doing, right? Like, commentary does a good job of telling us that Al Snow doesn't want anyone to lose, or he doesn't want Hardcore Holly to lose to anyone until he can beat Hardcore Holly for that championship, because he wants it so badly. So I guess that makes sense in Al Snow's twisted world.
Yeah, and the JR stuff is still, like I say, fascinating, because they're doing all this stuff to be like, well, let's make him a heel, and it's just like, everything you're doing makes him more sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I didn't realize this, I need to go back and watch it, but apparently on WrestleMania, like, before the main event, Michael Cole gives away the finish by basically saying that on the Home Shopping Network, the new champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin, will be on the Home Shopping Network, so he basically gives away the finish.
Does he? I did not notice that.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to it and just see if it's on the network version, but it was reported in The Observer, so I guess it happened at the time.
Wow.
Up next, we get The Rock versus Badass Billy Gunn. Shane McMahon joins in commentary, trying to kind of focus, which is weird because, like, his sister's been kidnapped, but he wants to come out and do commentary.
This is another moment where I believe Shane McMahon is complicit in the kidnapping of Stephanie McMahon, because he does not seem overly concerned.
No, he's just like,
obviously I'm very concerned about my baby sister, but let's get to the action. The Rock is so great.
Well, what's interesting here is Billy Gunn is a fairly popular performer, right? He's part of DX, he's part of the New Age Outlaws. Like, he is one of the most popular acts, or part of one of the most popular acts on the show.
Yes.
And he faces The Rock, who's just been, you know, the heel in the main event at WrestleMania. But when Rock hits the Rock Bottom of the People's Elbow, the people are going nuts for The Rock. Like, it is pretty much this point where it's like, okay, he's a heel, but, like, you can't keep him heel much longer, because they just want to cheat him now.
Well, and The Rock is not doing many, things to remain heelish is part of the problem, right? Like when The Rock is cutting promos, he did this at the Rage Party. He just like gave all of his catchphrases and even says like, I'm here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Like he was acting like a complete babyface. And I know like he sort of half-heartedly is like, nope, don't chant along with me. But then you need to stop doing all of your catchphrases if you don't want people to say them along with you, right? Like what happened when Daniel Bryan turned heel? He didn't want people to say yes, so he started saying no, and he wouldn't give the people what they wanted, right? Like Chris Jericho stopped putting people on the list because it was too popular and whatnot. So it's one of those things where The Rock is doing all of these things that are going to make him more babyface. And The Rock is a very charismatic performer, so of course, like, people are behind The Rock. They're more interested in The Rock than they are in Billy Gunn. Like, I personally like Billy Gunn better as a performer, but that's just my own personal hang up with, you know, The Rock and all of his catchphrases and just kind of becoming the stereotypical cartoon that he's almost becoming, because he is very catchphrase heavy at this point, even though he's great.
I mean, that's fair. I think that he's done well to kind of, because if you think about it, when he went babyface in September, everybody was cheering him. Like, they could have just went there. But I think that the decision to make him the corporate champion was quite a ballsy move, and I think it was the right move. Because mm-hmm. I think that ultimately him having that series with Mankind, and I think people, like, even you, right, you don't really like him, but I feel like the run that he had from like September to now has kind of made you maybe respect him a little bit more with some of the stuff that he's done.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know if that would have happened had he not had that run. So
yeah, that's fair. But it's just I've been seeing him do a lot more babyface things lately on the shows, and so it's like, well, no wonder people are cheering him. Of course they are.
Then we get Shamrock saying he's going to beat the information out of whoever has it to get Vince's baby girl back. Austin's watching the clock, which leads us to Ken Shamrock versus Gangrel. Gangrel is just being absolutely battered by Ken Shamrock. And eventually, belly-to-belly, ankle lock, and he beats Gangrel quite easily. Agent Christian end up coming out. After Shamrock, the lights go out, Shamrock gets a bloodbath, but then he grabs Christian by the ankle and it cranks on it until Christian eventually screams out that Stephanie is in the basement. And Shamrock, drenched in blood, goes to find Stephanie. Can we give Ken Shamrock a raise?
I love Ken Shamrock on this episode. I love him so much. Like, when he is not being super creepy and overprotected to his sister, I still love Ken Shamrock. I love him like crazy. He's great. Right. And I like the idea that Ken Shamrock went through the building. He was looking for Stephanie, couldn't find her. So, OK, I'll have a match with one of the members of the ministry, and then I will beat the shit out of that member of the ministry and make him tell me where she is. Now, Gangrel is much better at secret keeping than Christian, because Gangrel does not give away the location of Stephanie McMahon. Christian, you say finally he gives up where Stephanie is. He immediately starts going, she's in the basement, she's in the basement, she's in the basement, when Ken Shamrock gets the ankle lock on him. And I can't necessarily blame him. I'm sure Ken Shamrock's ankle lock is quite formidable and doesn't feel great on your leg, but I kind of like that, you know, okay, well, if I can't just like find her by going throughout the building, which makes sense, like what if she's moving around and whatnot, get the information out of someone the next way. Like, Ken Shamrock is actually being pretty effective as an investigator here, and Ken Shamrock getting a bloodbath and then immediately going to find her, I'm kind of like, I don't know if Stephanie McMahon is going to want to see like this man who's just covered in blood raging, like barging in on her or whatever. The image of Ken Shamrock in this episode is just great.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things that like happens sometimes in wrestling, where like you just stumble upon a night where somebody has like a star making performance, and Shamrock had it on this show. You know, he was kind of mm-hmm. not really doing much leading at WrestleMania apart from being creepy brother, and this episode is kind of like reset him to what we liked about him before. So good job.
And it's weird because it's casting him almost as a babyface, right?
Well, I feel like I can give this
a part of the evil corporation, but this is like the babyface part of the story.
I feel like what I can give away here is that this is the beginning of his babyface turn.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
So, yeah. I won't say what it is, but Ken Shamrock has a match at the next pay-per-view, which I really enjoy because it's something that, like, you know, sometimes there's two wrestlers you just never think you're going to see in a match together.
Yeah.
And we get it at Backlash, and it's one of my faves, although we'll watch it back, it'll probably be terrible. But anyway, so up next we get the Intercontinental
title. Maybe it won't be. Ken's quite good.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Okay, I'm not saying anything. The Intercontinental title's on the line, Road Dogg versus Goldust. Ryan Shamrock heads out to the ring, only to be sent back by the Blue Meanie. Road Dogg has got the upper hand, but then Shattered Dreams is blocked by the referee. Road Dogg goes after Blue Meanie. Meanie then accidentally splashes Goldust, and Road Dogg bulldogs Meanie into Goldust's crotch. Meanie ends up clocking Road Dogg with the belt, which allows Goldust to hit the curtain call to win the Intercontinental Championship. Goldust goes on post-match to say that that was a raging climax, and that we're gonna know something very soon. So, what do you make of Goldust being the Intercontinental Champion and making a cum reference and telling us something that is going to happen that we don't know about?
I mean, in the match, I was baffled as to how the Blue Meanie can be used as a weapon and it not be a disqualification of some sort. Because Road Dogg uses the Blue Meanie as a weapon, essentially. And that should be either, use of an illegal object or interference. And Mike Chioda does nothing about this. He's like, nope, this is totally fine. I was hoping that the whole Ryan Shamrock thing would be done just because, Goldust dumped her like everyone else dumps her. And I was hoping she would just, stop and make better decisions and just stay away. But apparently that's not what's happening. We're still continuing that story for some reason. Goldust being Intercontinental Champion, I guess, is fine. I don't know why this is happening. Like, why did Road Dogg retain last night? Why? Like, I just don't understand why any of this is happening, I suppose, is my thought. But whatever. Apparently, Goldust is trying to reinvent himself again. He's like, I know who I really am, and soon you'll all know too. And I'm just like, okay, but like you said that you were going to be a different person when you became the artist formerly known as Goldust. And then like you were Dustin, and then you were just Goldust. And now are you going to just be more Goldust? Or are you going to, like, I don't really know where that can go. Maybe it will go somewhere that will be intriguing, but I don't really understand what's happening. And the Blue Meanie being with Goldust is just really strange, and they seem to be just kind of going back to like Goldust being super weird again, which is fine, but it's just all kind of fine. The match wasn't as bad as I expected it to be, so that was positive.
Good for Goldust getting the IC title again. Good for him.
Yeah.
And Blue Meanie is just a conundrum of a human or a character.
He really is.
Shamrock ends up finding Stephanie crying with the ministry mark on her forehead. So Shamrock returns Stephanie to her dad. They have like an embrace. It's actually quite sweet, which is weird. So all seems to be right again,
I mean,
which.
Stephanie looks traumatized. That's something I'll say about her performance on the show. She looks absolutely traumatized by whatever has happened to her. And obviously, the Undertaker are like put the ministry symbol on her head. So something happened to this woman. And I think probably after whatever trauma happened to her, seeing big bloody Ken Shamrock with his bulging crazy eyes was probably a little bit jarring for her. It is a sweet family reunion. Again, this is all going on at the same time as the Stone Cold Steve Austin story. So it's hard to be completely invested in Vince McMahon's family and like thinking that he's a good dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely difficult given that they've got the two simultaneous storylines going on. But don't worry, Sondra. Up next, I want to just get you prepared. It is the final appearance on our Retro Raw journey of the Legion of Doom as they take on Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett for the tag team titles.
Why are they getting a tag title shot?
Because the Public Enemy got one.
It just makes me laugh that at WrestleMania, D'Lo Brown and Test got a tag title shot, and like Legion of Doom, who are an established tag team, and I guess could have been in that position, just weren't. I don't know. None of this makes any sense. The Legion of Doom, like, bless them, but they're so past being effective at anything at this point, right?
Yeah, it's bad. It is bad. So then we get so we get this
And
tag
they're just
title.
like back together.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, so in the end, like, Jeff Jarrett cracks the guitar over Hawk's head and puts Owen on top so they retain the belts, and like it didn't even feel like the wrong decision. It just kind of felt like LOD were done.
No, it just kind of feels like they need to go at this point. It really does. There were some fun shenanigans with Deborah distracting the referee for the guitar shot, and then Paul Ellering kind of like chasing after Deborah and going after it in his Mr.com jacket that we only got to see briefly. But, you know, I always appreciate the Mr.com jacket and Paul Ellering just being a baffling human. So I kind of liked the shenanigans there. But LOD just kind of feels sad at this point.
They do. So RIP to the LOD run that we've seen the last 2 years. Vince then thanks Shamrock for his services. Shane's got the Smoking Skull belt. Vince doesn't care because the night's over. And he just tells Shane, give the belt to Austin. So they leave. Vince takes Stephanie. And Shane, of course, says tonight is not over. Shane comes out with Hunter. So it's going to be Hunter versus X-Pac. It's a big brawl to start off. Actually quite a hot brawl to kick it off. X-Pac is really angry. He ends up missing a Bronco Buster. The Face Buster puts him down, but then he comes back with like a spin wheel kick, and he goes to chase Shane, and he runs right into a China clothesline, which ends up drawing a DQ. Shane, Triple H, and China then beat down X-Pac until Kane makes the save. Shane goes after him, but the distraction doesn't really help. In terms of like, I mean, so basically, Kane is now. I mean, what do you make of the Kane thing, Sandra? Because, you know, Kane has this story going into WrestleMania, and you talked about how, you know, you quite liked the partnership with China and Kane, and they mm-hmm. were together, and she just fucked him. So her and Triple H were in on it all along, and now Kane is now this kind of sympathetic guy again. How do you feel about it?
Were she and Triple H in on it all along, or did she bring Triple H over to the side? Because I kind of feel like she brought Triple H into it later on. Like, I kind of feel like Kane and China might have had a real friendship. Like, I don't know. It seems like they did kind of care about each other. At least Kane cared about China. So it would be heartbreaking for him to have her, you know, turn on him and betray his trust and all that kind of stuff. Kane is a very sympathetic character. One of the most sympathetic characters on Retro Raw, and so is X-Pac every time he's not speaking. So it's interesting to me that two of the characters I feel the worst for, I mean, it makes sense that Kane would make the save for X-Pac because he has issues with the same people that have turned on X-Pac, right? It makes sense for them to come together. I know that Kane and X-Pac become a tag team at some point. I'm guessing that this is the start of that because that would make absolute sense. And I think it has come together fairly organically because Kane, as a member of the corporation and whatnot, like, he's not in the corporation. Is he just not in the corporation now? Is that... like, is he just a free agent roaming around in sadness?
Yeah, he's not in the corporation now.
So, but they're not sending him back to the insane asylum, which is good. And I don't know, like, Kane always feels like someone who's looking for his place. Like, his parents died and the house burned down and Paul Bearer kidnapped him. But then, you know, like, he found his brother, but then he fought his brother. And now, like, you know, Vince McMahon brought him in and DX tried to bring him in. Like, no, I don't want to go back to the insane asylum. So Kane just always feels like he's kind of wandering around looking for a place to belong. And I hope that X-Pac is a good friend to him and that they can, you know, be great. I really kind of like the idea of them as a team. It works for me a lot because the corporation was horrible to Kane and Triple H and China have been horrible to X-Pac.
Yeah, it's almost like a common enemy. You know, they've got this common goal of the enemy that they have and see where it goes. Shane ends up staying in the ring because he says that, you know, he's a champion, and if Austin wants his belt, all he has to do is look around the waist of the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. Cue the Rock with the title over his shoulder. Rock gives Austin credit before kind of changing his mind, saying, you know, there's nobody we can take the belt from. He might have lost last night, but it took two stunners to do it. Austin comes down. Austin and Rock start getting a fight. Then there's a stunner for Shane. Rock takes him down, Smoking Skull belt to the head, drops Austin. Triple H comes down, Shamrock, Test, all to take out Austin, but Big Show makes the save, allowing Austin to stand back while he kind of cleans house, and Big Show chokeslams Triple H to end the show. Do you know, I actually thought the close to this was pretty effective in terms of it was kind of resetting for us of who's in what camp, right? Like, we saw that X-Pac and Kane kind of are now kind of not together, but they're going to have to kind of join forces if they want to have any chance taking out China.
They're on the same side, at least. Like, if they're not together, but their alignments are the same.
Yeah, so they're going to kind of have to coexist to take out Triple H and China. Big Show is now, you know, no longer part of the corporation. So when he saw Austin being taken out by the corporation, he came down to help. So things are being realigned, things are being altered, and I thought that was a good hook for continuing to watch. But what did you make of the main event segment?
I mean, part of what I make of the main event segment is that Shane McMahon is an absolute prick, right? Like, Vince McMahon just wanted this to be done because Vince McMahon is concerned about his daughter. He's more concerned about his daughter's well-being at this point than he is with the Austin shenanigans, which is crazy because Vince McMahon always puts his hatred of Stone Cold Steve Austin above everything else. So it seems very out of character for Vince McMahon to be so concerned about Stephanie. And so I don't know, like that part is interesting, but Shane McMahon just being like, no, we can't let this lie after everything that happened to my baby sister. Like, I need to upset the cart and I need to make more shenanigans and I need to make more chaos or whatever he's doing. He's just kind of throwing a wrench in the world for everybody. And so for The Rock to have the smoking skull belt and for Austin to need to kind of like fight to get it back from him, it reminded me actually of remember when they were fighting over the Intercontinental Championship, Stone Cold and The Rock, and The Rock had the belt for a long time, even though Austin was the champion.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that is, it's a similar thing. It's funny that the Austin Rock thing kind of feels weird because of the whole Rock kind of feeling like a babyface again now. So the alignment is different, right? Because it's not like before WrestleMania where everybody wanted to see Austin beat the Rock because he had kind of wronged Mick Foley and all that kind of stuff. Like, the alignments are a little bit different, which I think makes it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. And I mean, if Austin and The Rock are still kind of involved with each other, but The Rock is still in the corporation. And like, you're right about the reset of alignments. Like, this did kind of make clear who was on what side. Big Show helping Steve Austin was interesting because as Steve Austin was getting beaten up and beaten up and beaten up and beaten up, right? Like, and one thing just to mention, like, China's interference in this match would have been a lot more effective if she weren't wearing those platform heels. I know we keep banging on about this, but she almost fell over doing a clothesline because she can barely do it because she can barely walk in those heels because they're ridiculous, right? Like, she can walk in them fine, but wrestling and doing moves in them does not work. But like, there is something about her like beating up Steve Austin and trying to like kick him and whatnot, and she has these huge heels on him. Like, don't actually murder him. Like, please don't stomp on him too hard because that would be very bad. But like, as he's getting beaten up and beaten up and beaten up, it did cross my mind. I was like, Austin doesn't have any friends. Like, it makes sense to me why no one in the locker room is coming out to help him. I mean, maybe Mankind would come out to help him, but Mankind's like not on this show, is he? So being, you know, the one who counted the pinfall at WrestleMania took it out of him, or he just wasn't there. I don't know. But for Big Show to interfere and help Austin, alignment-wise, that actually does make sense because Big Show is angry at the corporation for kind of screwing him over, even though he was just so ineffective at his job, he deserved to be kicked out. But, like, I mean, he actually showed up to do a thing, so I guess that's positive. I can't say that I'm clamoring for a Big Show-Steve Austin partnership as much as I would be if Big Show were motivated, because he is a capable performer when he's motivated, but he's just been so terrible on Retro Raw.
So where would your thumb be for this episode of Raw?
It's weird because I wasn't bored the whole time, and a lot of the story threads within it were very interesting. I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle because the two conflicting stories mean it can't be a thumbs up for me. And like, I would almost want to give it a thumbs down, but I wasn't bored and I was kind of intrigued and captivated by some of it. And I was sort of intrigued and captivated by something involving The Undertaker, which is a feat, right? Like, I hated the women's stuff because Sable turning on Jacqueline made no sense, but I don't know. Like, I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's a thumbs up show for me. I thought that they did a good job of keeping me interested and kind of moving on from WrestleMania, but keeping some storylines the same, but aligning new stuff. And I thought they did a good job, you know, because like, I know a lot of times now when we watch post-WrestleMania Raws, a lot of it is about new people. And they managed to kind of do a lot with pretty much the same roster of people. So, yeah, thumbs up for me. Whose song do you think should play us out this week?
I think we should play The Brood's music. Or no, let's play Ken Shamrock's music. He was great on this episode.
Yeah. Okay, so give us the plug, Sondra, before we play his music.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. You can hear Ollie and me talking about the Rage Party soon. That's going to be up. You can hear Finn Martin and me recap WrestleMania 15. If you want to hear what happened the night before this, tons of bonus content is going to be going up there WrestleMania week as well. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can find lots of interview content. And there's going to be a whole bunch of that going up on WrestleMania week as well, vlogs, like our, vlogs of what we're doing throughout the week. So you'll get to see faces of the crew and that kind of stuff. Should be a lot of fun. And is there insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to things? And did I miss anything? I'm kind of all over the place right now.
No, I think that's it. So thank you for listening. Thanks for all your support. We are caught up on Retro Raw. Yay!
Yay!
Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you have a good week. It's going to be 7 days, 7 podcasts. It's going to be insane. It's going to be consuming, but it's going to be a fun week. So we look forward to sharing it with you. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.